There it is. Monday morning, busted pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Monday morning homeroom. Dr. Tim Slecker, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, you know, giving him a day, Jacob. But hey, no need to worry because we got chairman of the boards, Jacob, with us. And Jacob, I think you and I can handle this today.
I think we can certainly try, Tim. Today it's more like educated educator talking education, because I'm not an educator and I'm barely educated.
But it's, well, tell me about this, though. You know, maybe before we break into homeroom. Right? So you've been with us now about, what, 3 weeks?
With you? Yeah. Like a month and a half now.
Month and a half. Okay. Yeah. So really, you're not feeling like you have now learned enough to be an educator of people who say, Jacob, what's it like working with those two educated educators? You know, well, what are you learning, man? What's going on?
It only took me a couple days to learn the word rough, Tim. So I can educate people about that. Yeah, but
rough.
I mean,
have we thrown any kind of like crazy words at you where you're like, okay, that those are like doctor words and stop using them, Tim and Johnny?
Not really, Tim. I'm a veritable thesaurus myself, so I understand words pretty well. I'm pretty good with words.
So when you hear the word pedagogy, what do you think?
I can't get into the specifics of what words mean, Tim, but I vaguely understand context clues most of the time.
Well, you know, when I use a certain pedagogy, there are students that really dig deep into the learning.
Does it have something to do with feet?
Bipedalness. No, okay. Pedagogy. So this is one of those words that a lot of people go, why don't you just say teaching?
Yeah.
You know, and well, actually. Wait,
it means teaching?
Well, you know, so.
Then yes, why don't you just say teaching? I get behind those.
Exactly,
other
right. Right. And in fact, you know, Johnny and I sometimes, you know, we tease a little bit about the fact that, yeah, sometimes we use these words when the reality is like, why? Why would you use that word when you have a word like teaching that could be used instead? And, well, you know, how else, though, would we justify the thousands of dollars of graduate student loan debt that we took on to be able to call ourselves doctor if we didn't use words that made people go, oh my God, you're one of those idiots?
Is there a Latin phrase you can use for justifying spending a lot of money? Because that may
know.
Be a key phrase to bring into this conversation.
Well, maybe. Well, you know what though, Jacob, though? I mean, I'm glad that, you know, a month and a half now you're in. I think you are an educated educator who can talk education now, because, you know, the reality of when you just kind of laid it out there and said, yes, Tim, I agree, you should just use the word teaching, then that means that, you know, you're kind of going on this. And that's where Johnny and I usually come down, because, you know, as you say at the end of the show, the blue collar scholars, we've tried to hold on to that. And in fact, you know, kind of like to mock some of our peers that tend to use those words that make your neighbor go, eh. So they're, you know, snooty.
That is
one
a
of
good
those
sound, yeah.
Yeah, oh my God, nothing, you know, nothing like that. But Jacob, you know what, we are, well, you know, 100 plus days into this administration, and as we continue to talk and share, education has, you know, had quite a few developments, things happening, decisions being made that daily makes one scratch their head and go, really? That now?
Yep.
You know, we're not even going to talk about this one, but, you know, this morning I saw, you know, well, funding for hungry kids has now been cut.
Tim, we need to stop spending money on kids from Hungary. All right. American kids need that money, Tim.
Exactly, Jacob.
I could see that being the reason that happened. It could very well just be that the president thought that's for kids in Hungary.
What are we feeding these kids from Hungary for? That doesn't sound like our president. But yeah, boy, I didn't even think of that. I was more kind of going down the lines of going, well, here's one more act of cruelty that maybe we shouldn't have been surprised by. But yeah, the state of Indiana, and again, state by state, because education is a state issue, but they've announced that summer funding for hungry kids that, you know, comes from the federal government, they're just going to say, we don't need it this year. So or this summer, because maybe it's because it's going to be a banner crop year in Indiana and the need to feed the hungry won't exist.
Tim, so you're telling me that this is federal money that is available to Indiana and they're just capriciously saying, no, thank you. We don't want any money to feed kids.
Yeah. It gets too many, red tape. There's all these things there and it's a hassle. You know, and the way we're looking at it, I mean, you know, we're actually helping parents have a little bit of an easier life because then they won't have to figure out, you know, in their taxes next year how to claim. I don't know what it is that happens like this. But you see things like where you go, really? It's like, wait, you're turning down something that was already allocated.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know, maybe, you know, some border states are going, we'll take it.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it'll work that way. I don't know. But Jacob, so let's get news, but I'm going to start by singing and then I'm going to ask you to name that tune.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ready?
Yes. Now
I don't know if you're
I had to work myself up to it, but I'm ready now.
Rubber ducky, you're the one. You make taking a bath so much fun. Rubber ducky, you're the one for me.
Yes.
Do you know where that song comes from, Jacob?
Sesame Street, right?
You got it. And do you know the singer of that song?
I'm thinking Ernie.
It was Ernie. You got it.
Yes.
You got it.
Yes. And based on the way you sang it, I think we should keep it that way. From now on, Ernie should be the one doing that.
Let's bring Ernie on. Yeah, Sesame Street. And so did you watch Sesame Street, Jacob, when you were,
sure,
you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think Sesame Street was my favorite thing when I was four.
No.
I was more into documentaries about World War II. But Sesame Street is good. I think everybody, since it came out, at least some period in their lives. I mean, generation upon generation of children. Am I right?
Well, and the reason I did that is because, yeah, you know, you're a different generation than Johnny and I. And, you know, a lot of people go, well, nobody watches that stuff anymore anyway. And it's just like, okay, no, actually Sesame Street continues to be one of those programs. Mr. Rogers, right? You know, Fred Rogers. What I'm talking about is, well, the next funding cut, PBS Kids content, the public broadcasting service, PBS Kids content. So I kind of drove back into the early days. So Sesame Street, Mr. Rogers, there has since those been all kinds of PBS Kids content. And so let's chop off the kids content. And why are we cutting off PBS Kids, Jacob? Well, the way I'm reading this is because, you know, for the longest time, Ernie singing about his rubber ducky, somehow that pushed a Marxist propaganda that has created a deep hatred of this country by millions of now adults who had to be forced to sit through Ernie singing about his rubber ducky. That's my sense of why we need to cut PBS Kids content.
Well, it doesn't seem to have worked because I think plenty of MAGA people watched Sesame Street as a kid, and now they're, you know, driving F-150s and watching NASCAR and such. So it doesn't seem to have worked in some aspects, Tim. I mean, yeah, if it is Marxist propaganda, most people don't seem to be getting that out of it.
I that's kind of the test I put to all of these claims that such and such, this resulted in communism, Marxism, socialism, and going, we're like the most ultimate capitalistic society ever. Yeah. And if all of these things actually are intended, let's just go with intended. So if Ernie in his bathtub enjoying his rubber ducky had the intentions of creating some form of a sense of socialistic group understanding, you know, appreciation, and somehow a anti-American sentiment, it doesn't work very well. Because the evidence is all around us, Jacob. In fact, the MAGA movement, to me, is pretty strong evidence that actually Ernie wasn't very successful at creating a whole lot of change.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's where I always come down on these issues, is to say the claim of, you know, this causes anti-Americanism, this causes, you know, a hatred of capitalism, this undermines the American way of life, is to then look at the evidence for if that's truly occurring. And yeah, like you, Jacob, I kind of look at the, you know, the American world, the American culture right now. And, you know, what are we, 50 plus years of PBS broadcasting for kids, you know? So Mr. Rogers, yeah, Sesame Street, The Electric Company, more recently, Molly of Denali, Work It Out, Wombats, Lila in the Loop. They're just obviously staffed by really bad writers and creators that, if they have the intention to create anti-Americanism, they're just not so good at it, I would think, maybe.
I think you're onto something here, Tim, and I wonder what programming the MAGA crowd has been watching that is succeeding in making them so anti-American. Because, you know, this anti-free speech kick they're on now, if you say an opinion that's wrong, you should be sent to a detention center in Louisiana, possibly then sent to El Salvador. Anti-Christian, you know, not caring about poor people, not caring about the meekest among us. So I wonder what children's programming they watched. Maybe that's a different Sesame Street that I never watched, because I watched that and I just didn't hit kids at school and was nice to people.
I know. So yeah, so let's put that out there. Okay, so if it's not causing that, you know, truly, then the question is so then why cut funding for kids programming from PBS? So, I mean, why do it? And in a way, Jacob, I'm kind of asking you this morning, what do you think? I mean, what's the motivation then behind cutting funding for PBS?
Tim, I think that there's a long-lasting culture war issue around this. It's not just in the United States. If you look at England with the BBC or Canada with the CBC, conservatives tend to be against public broadcasting. They see bias in it. And I'm sure you can do studies to see maybe there is some bias in one way or the other, but it just seems to be, in general, in countries that have a public broadcasting corporation, conservatives don't like it very much. So that's been going on for a long time. Specifically right now, then you have the current administration wants to do a lot of tax cuts. They want to lower the amount of money that the government has to spend. And so it's become important to find anything they can to cut a little bit of money. As we saw with DOGE, it's not always a sensical cut like USAID. It's a drop in the bucket, has a lot of impact in the world, but it's not really saving a lot of money to cut it. Doesn't matter, cut it. So I think what you're going to see, Tim, is just anything that a conservative politician can make any sort of case about to say, oh, this is woke, this is DEI, this is anything, to cut it, because their monetary policies don't make any sense.
Okay. I really appreciate that analysis, Jacob, because I think that really does put out there truly the reality. I think what happens is, though, too, is that it gets the culture warrior base riled up.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and gets them in that mode of going, yes, cut it. But as we say, the claims of what it does or what it's doing just don't hold up. But that isn't really the issue here. And I'm going to kind of take a leap, or maybe not a leap, and point out that I think what you said very much, this is about finding money for tax cuts. This is that, I mean, you know, if we're about to extend $1.5 trillion is the number I heard in tax cuts to be able to continue this, where's the money going to come from? And well, then we got to find somewhere to get it. So let's take away the emotions that go with this and just look at the mathematics and say, you know, we've got a budget of so and so many dollars. We're going to apportion this amount for tax cuts. Well, if we're going to apportion this amount for tax cuts, then the rest of the money goes here. Oh, crap, there's a misbalance here, because if we give PBS the amount of money that we typically give them, then we're going to have to reduce the tax cuts. So, you know what, though? A lot of people, if they think about Bert, Ernie, Big Bird, Mr. Rogers, any of those characters, they might get a little upset, because I think, as you say, most people have a fond memory of PBS kids content. I think that. And so to kind of create that anger in an ability to then support these cuts, we create a story.
Yes.
A story of what's happening because of, and it doesn't hold up, you know, any type of evidence that says that. So I look at this, and so my thought then is, if you're a teacher, and this is the other part of bringing PBS, coming back to teachers, it was the content, and it still is the content that public school teachers could use without the concern of copyright and all these things. These were educational programs that were created so that teachers could use them. And this is one of the things, you know, you start to worry about and say, you know, is it quality content? You know, and people are always worried, you know, we don't want teachers just, you know, downloading stuff and bringing it in without knowing where it came from. Well, you know, when you had PBS content, you knew where it came from. You knew what it was doing. Except now, though, we have a conversation of saying, no. What kids' programming at PBS is doing is creating an anti-American sentiment. And if we can convince my neighbor that anti-Americanism is rampant through kids' programming, then I think they're more likely to go, yeah, we should cut that. Go ahead, Jeff.
I think there's a natural impulse for people, especially when you're a parent, to worry about what your kids are learning, whether it's in school or from media, not just educational stuff, you know, just the entertainment they watch. Are they getting bad lessons?
Right.
But that's natural. And I think what we're seeing here is using that natural fear that people have, stoking it and convincing them to be angry at PBS or what have you, to get back to those cuts we were talking about. Fundamentally, I think the big problem that the current government has is that they want to cut taxes and cut spending. And they're finding it's really hard to cut spending, especially when it's pretty bare bones as it is.
Right.
So
Yeah. Well, you know, and you say pretty objectively there, you know, we want to cut spending, but and we want to cut taxes. And in fact, though, to cut taxes, we kind of have to cut spending. I'm just going to put this out there, Jacob, as we're kind of coming to the close of homeroom, just asking, you know, maybe a rhetorical question or a question to you. What if we didn't cut taxes?
Oh, that's impossible, Tim. We always have to cut taxes. We need to have negative taxes.
I mean, I was just thinking about this and saying, you know, instead of taking Ernie's rubber duck and deflating it, or maybe like we did in the late 60s, early 70s, you know, around July 4th, attaching, you know, fireworks to rubber duckies and seeing what happens to them. Maybe we could say that the tax cuts, we just can't afford tax cuts right now.
I think that should be a message that people can understand from both sides of the political spectrum, because whether you're a Democrat and you're more liberal, you think that social spending is important. Or if you're a traditional, you know, real conservative, you're worried about the debt and you're worried about, you know, the budget being out of whack. And you should also want to keep taxes at a reasonable rate. So both sides intellectually should not really want to cut taxes right now at this moment we're at in our history and in our government. Unfortunately, the populist thing going on right now on the right wing, they can't take the time to think of those more well-reasoned proposals. It just happens to be how it is, Tim.
But that's why we're here, and that's why you and I get to do such an awesome homeroom this morning, you know, to kind of put out there a little bit of reasonability from, you know, the education podcast. Maybe we can't afford tax cuts right now. And maybe we should leave Ernie and his rubber ducky alone for a little longer, and maybe revisit this. But Jacob, I tell you what, now it's time for your moment of zen. It is the citizenry rather than the government that is the ultimate source of power and the locomotive that pulls the train of government in the direction of equality and justice.
Got pretty bad weather today, Tim.
I understand that. Well, you know what, though? Thanks, everybody, for busting pencils with Chairman of the Board, Jacob Mead, Dr. Tim Slecker. Hey, make sure on Wednesday you grab classes in session. Friday, hurdles and home runs, always out there. And yes, Saturday, one full hour of busted pencils. You know, if you're listening live in the Wisconsin area, across every civic media app contraption that's out there, you can listen live. And of course, you can always download all busted pencils, either through Apple, through Spotify, through the Civic Media webpage, or also, hey, go to bustedpencils.com where you can get everything Busted Pencils that you want to know. Make sure you are always following the Blue Collar Scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.